Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Saturday, June the 16th, 2001. In the fireside room this morning is Eunice Scarf. Today's session number is 2001-5, and it's entitled Naming Your Story, a Writing Workshop for Everyone, Writing to Extend and Strengthen Community. Let's listen in.
I'm Eunice Scarf, and we're starting today the last session of Naming Your Story, the Act and Art of Writing the Self. And I want to start in response to what's a writer. The working definition I have, which I think is the best definition you'll find, she says humbly, is a writer is one with story who chooses to write it down. It's an act of choice. Not you are gifted, you are talented, you are more sensitive, alert, aware, you choose. A writer is one with story, remembered or invented, who chooses. To be a writer is to write. There are those who define a writer by one who publishes. To be a writer is to write. Publishing is one outcome. For me, writing is to stay fit in body, mind, and spirit. It's a daily practice. And the process we've used this week, I teach not in order to become the next best-selling American novelist, but be fit in body, mind, and spirit, to integrate, hold one story. I think I've just given kind of a manifesto. I also wish to say, in the last 10 minutes, or maybe it's the last 24 hours, I got the answer to my question, which I've been addressing, like the Ancient Mariner naming people, saying, where's the story that reflects the world in which you grew up? Where's the novel that represents your understanding of the world in childhood, with religion as may or may not be a major character, factor, influence, pillar? And some have been brash enough to say, why does this matter? He's sitting right here, Lars. Why does this matter? Why does this matter? And I've been searching for enough answers to persuade the doubtful and not come up with very good ones, except I was reading out by the river yesterday when I pretended to go hiking and snuck off as soon as I could to sit by the river and read. Looks good to leave the village with a backpack filled with books. Is the best of spiritual writing... 1998. This is the first time I've seen this volume. It was in Diane's house. It's the first volume of its kind. There's the best short story, the best poems, the best essays of each given year as published in literary magazines the previous year. And I want to read you one line. And if you're not urgent about this question, this line might not be something you need this morning. But I have to tell you that it's the last 24 hours I found an answer to a question I've been asking for a long, long, long time. And she's talking about spiritual writing as that document of the journey of the soul, of the spirit. And it shows up in literary text, in memoir, in confessional writing, in journal. But it is the search, the record of the search. So if I say memoir matters, your story matters, bearing witness to the world in which you've lived, I'm here doing what I believe no writer should have to do, which is to footnote themselves. Look, I've got this good quote to back me up. It's Augustine as well. Because mostly I say a writer goes to their experience and their imagination for footnote. Your experience is your highest authority. But here I'm pulling in Augustine this morning. Is he in good faith by anybody who knows? Is he a good one to quote?
Yes.
Luther was Augustine. Has he been, but he couldn't go out of favor. I mean, I know he was good when I was growing. He hasn't been revisionist on him, any revisions. The autobiographical, this is a quote from Hempel, who's a Minneapolis memoirist and novelist, the editor. The autobiographical business of Augustine, to look back in order to go forward. And I repeat that, to look back in order to go forward. And I've often used the image of map, the map of where you've been in order to map where you're going, was to make literary texts regarding the life of the soul. And this is a quote from Augustine. My desire, Augustine says, in Book 8 of the Confessions, was not to be more sure of you, God, but more steadfast in you. And the writing was to ground oneself in one's own lived experience. My desire, says Augustine, was not to be more sure of you, but more steadfast in you. And then Hempel writes a line, the burden of proof is not God's, but the human soul's. For it is the soul in its life, not God in his eternity, who has a story it must tell. And I kind of like that. It is the soul in this life that has the story it must tell. Well, the penny dropped for me that we are writing a journey relative to our relationship, not only to our geographical and our inherited and our religious life, but our spiritual life, and reflecting it. The soul in its life. Does that exclude anybody? No. Does everybody have a story to tell? Who has a story it must tell relative to its relationship? Well, that may not convince some of you doubters who still say, why must we? Well, I acknowledge, Lars, you've certainly said, told me enough to do to keep you going two lifetimes that you intend to write here. This is the last day of a session which has talked about naming your story and the place and purpose of the page and how to fill it. If you just come, we'll write today. So you get 10 minutes. My goal was for you all to have a page to take away every day and for some of you to have your story heard while we've gathered together. I'd like to spend about 2 to 3 minutes just reflecting on the process we've used, because today we're talking about writing in order to make and strengthen and extend community. How does story gather us in and bind us together? And I want to tell a tiny little story and then invite if you have any experiences, and then we'll open up to writing. I, for a time, went to a Mennonite church in Canada. Having been brought up Lutheran, it was a shock to come into an environment where there was no liturgy, and on the other hand, it was very informative to experience worship with no liturgy. I went because they sang like angels, and as one does in one's life, you are moving in another direction for a period of time. During that time, however, I discovered that there were many single women like myself. I was recently widowed, somebody else was divorced, somebody else was not married, somebody else had been divorced and widowed. And the single ones in that particular congregation were Lone Rangers. I don't know if you've ever observed or experienced this, that the Noah's Ark sort of rules the image of this congregation, two by two by two. And the individual women found themselves not only in somewhat isolation from the life of the congregation or feeling like spare wheels, but the founding of the congregation had been couples who came up from Coaldale Mennonite community in southern Alberta into the city, and together, so they were all about the same age, and they had a wonderful congregation going, and they called anyone who hadn't come up from Coaldale with them or who wasn't born Mennonite a newcomer, capital N, newcomer. And you probably could be newcomer for three generations under those definitions. And what we did, and it was sort of by accident, is offered a Bible study that was story, and we called it Miriam's Story, My Story. And we looked at the life of Miriam, who has 4 references in the Old Testament, which is about 3 more than some of the other women have, and about 4 more than a lot of the women had. And that is Miriam as a young woman caretaking Moses, Miriam as a young adult woman being asked to lead the people in song after crossing the Red Sea, the leader woman, the caretaking woman, the leader woman, Miriam questioning Moses, why does God only speak to you and not to Aaron and me? So the one asserting her thoughtfulness, I suppose one could say there, and for that she was banished to 7 days in the wilderness. And the last reference is, and Miriam died, and the people of Israel stopped for 7 days. Well, we thought that covered a lifetime, from childhood to death. And so let's look at our lifetime, let's look at memoir. We started by that as our overriding invitation to write from life experience, and then we just kept handing out prompts as we've used this week. And what we found is that people wrote and heard each other's stories in a way that found it difficult previously to insert their story into a rather self-contained community. And some of the lines we used was all our Sundays were exactly alike. And I'm going to give you that as a prompt today. All our Sundays were exactly alike. Which you could change to none of our Sundays were ever alike. And it takes you back in time to a day of the week for which everyone has probably memory. It's unlike the other six. It's a sacred versus the ordinary, exceptional. And we heard stories of childhood in the church. That line comes from Emily Carr, which is the second one up there, from her autobiography, the very first line, "All our Sundays were exactly alike. How did you celebrate them? What did you do?" And we used from another autobiography of a United Church minister's daughter, the line, "On Saturday nights, my mother washed my hair, put it in ringlets, so on Sunday morning I could look like a picture." And the notion of Saturday night preparation for Sunday, which in any community which celebrates Sunday, any home which celebrates Sunday, is often connected in experience. And so gathered out the story, and so observed that by hearing each other's stories, spaces were made for experiences larger than the major narrative, which was, we came from Coaldale, and we arrived here in 1964, and this is the church we created, and you're welcome to sit and watch. Once having heard the stories of those with quite diverse origins. Now, I open it up. Do you have any experience of story being the icebreaker in both accidental ways? Of course you have experience of that. And in more deliberate ways. You know, what obligation, if any, do we have to make deliberate ways to hear story? And if anyone have anything they want to add, insert in their own experience of story, serving to enlarge community.
I think I have a couple of stories. One that comes out of the context of, I think your life is your work, but I don't know what I get paid for, which is I'm a minister, a campus minister at Georgetown. And Georgetown is a Jesuit school, but isn't intentionally the campus ministry section of it. Has tried to be intentionally ecumenical, but also intentionally interfaith. And so we have Muslim chaplains and Jewish rabbis and Protestant and Catholic who are all sitting around the table and whose language is so different. Mm-hmm. And story has been something that twofold. One, that has brought us to the table because we all share the Abraham story. But story has also brought our differences. Mm-hmm. And really having to be intentional about carving out a space of listening to people's story and to make room in your own story. Of serving God and letting them in and vice versa has really been powerful.
Thank you. Thank you. I think if we take the definition of story is that is speaking from experience rather than from acquired knowledge, footnoted text, theoretical foundation, doctrine, theology, story invites the experience. And I see more and more, I'm more and more aware of the gap between a group gathered together who are speaking out of experience, or making space for that, not doing only that, but making space for that to happen, as well as whatever else is on the menu that day. From experience, no one can argue with your experience. You are the prime witness, you are the only witness. It is that which on you are, that on which you are the greatest authority, about which you are the greatest authority. Yes. Tell me your name again.
I'm Anne.
Anne, I've got your relationship down.
Yes.
Anne, yeah.
Also, in campus ministry at Michigan State University, I can think of where story with on trips or you know one-on-one times would open up a new relationship with a student where they'd be struggling with something or you know, and I could say, well, oh yeah. You know, I had a lot of relationships, and some of them were really crappy. And then, you know, all of a sudden, I'm not the pastor's wife judging this person for whatever they're going through, and then my story would open up on a relationship.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to advice.
Right.
We had a student who was remarkable with that. We were driving from Michigan down to Asheville, North Carolina, this van full of students, and she said, okay, we're going to go around the van once, and we're going to tell stories that are funny about things we're scared of. And then we're going to go around again, and we're going to tell about the thing that we're most scared of. Mm-hmm. And this is a woman who can't have a student, who won't be able to have children, who's on these heavy medications, and maybe a shortened lifespan. It was the most incredible couple hundred miles of driving to wait to get gas.
And that's intentional when we say we'll go around and everyone tells one.
She's just an artist. Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing.
As opposed to who, you know, story happens all the time, but to make it intentional that everyone has heard, that's quite a different.
I use it with, or I've seen it done with my kids. I teach sixth graders. Mm-hmm. And this last year I did a copy change poem, I Am From. And then you on that, and I had written mine without telling them that it was my story. And then they had to explain what that person was like. Mm-hmm. And later told them it was me. And then had each one of them write it. Mm-hmm. And I got everything from, you know, I'm from the night when my father was taken away by the police, mm-hmm. to I'm from the fields of Lompoc. And a couple of kids took it home to their parents. Mm-hmm. And their parents read it and said, oh, I'd forgotten about that particular incident. Okay, so it can work with kids. These are 11-year-old kids.
Yeah.
Just as powerfully as they can with adults.
Okay. We use it in our family that way. My youngest said at Christmas, it's always the same old story. No room in the inn. You know. I said, well, you know, we do, at their birthdays, we tell the story of when I was pregnant and labor and delivery and the first few months of their life. And I said, every birthday for you is the same story too, so mm-hmm. so we use their birth story as a uniting.
And as a new story, I am listening. I just realized I don't know the page I was looking for, so I can listen and look for a page. Thank you. The use of the child's own birth story in the midst of Christmas story. We're going to write now. I'm going to make closure on the question. What is the purpose of writing our story? What is the necessity? What is the way we can use story to enlarge community? And invite you to write. And the first passage, and if you haven't been here before, I read something. You are free to write anything you like. You might choose to write from a line or a memory. And I have paper up here if you don't have it, that is opened up in the prompt. So if you hear a line you like, move from there into text. Always, you should write who you've heard, so that if you do something with this, you can say, after hearing Peter Carey. There's a passage from Peter Carey, Oscar in the Synod today. Now, I have more than this. Pass that, please, if you like. Oscar and Lucinda, it's a short passage that shows up in the middle of the novel Oscar and Lucinda, which is set in Australia, well, England in Australia. Yes. And it's a quite remarkable repetition of a line, we believe. And it invites you to consider the we in which you've lived. Here's more paper. How about if we listen and then I'll get delivered all the paper and all the pens, or anybody who's got an extra can dig it out. But let's hear the prompt, and then those who'd like to start can start. I'd like to give you a good 10 to 15 minutes to write. It starts like this. And please listen to the rhythm that is set up. And the last line is a startling after the list, in my opinion anyway. And it goes like this. My father, my mother, my brother, my sister, and I believed the following. The miracle of the loaves and fishes. The miracle of the virgin birth. All those miracles involving the healing of the sick and the driving out of demons. We believed Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. We believed God spoke from the burning bush. We believed Moses' rod turned into a serpent. We believed Aaron's rod turned into a serpent. We believed the river turned to blood. We believed God sent the plague of frogs. God sent the plague of lice, of boils, of hail, of locust. We believed God took the firstborn of the Egyptians. We believed the story of Jonah and the whale. We believed Lot's wife was turned to a pillar of salt. We believed God parted the waters of the Red Sea. We believed Jesus walked on the Sea of Galilee, then he turned water into wine, that he rose from the dead and ascended into heaven. We had none of the doubts of the 1860s. At Christmas, we made a Star of Bethlehem from cardboard and silver paper. And that's the end of the page. It looks like that on the page. Do you hear the long listing and suddenly located in place and time and practice? We made a cardboard star with silver and put it on the tree. This is the master narrative, one line. This is our narrative. Do you hear it when it shifts? The other night we did God Bless My People, God of Abraham, God of Isaac, God of Me. From the story we've inherited to the story we're living. You can start with We Believed if you like, and you can do political beliefs, you can do religious beliefs, you can do the unwritten rules in your household, the rules about money. You can do the rules about what you should do with your life. These were the rules of my childhood, and these are the rules I now live by. We believe. Or you can make it a testament of your own God belief. But there's a whole set of circles in which you live relative to belief. Every area of your life coded. So enter any one of those areas if you like. What I was going to do from Hannah's Daughters is, and I'll just give this as a prompt, I can't find the, and we don't have time to read it, this is a Swedish novel, to write a fairy tale for your life once upon a time. There is no way better to invite many into a story than to do a fairy tale. Once upon a time usually brings us all in right here. So I don't need her fairy tale, I just give you the line, once upon a time. Go back and say there was a little girl or there was a little boy. Bring yourself into a fairy tale of any design you like. You've read them, you've heard them. That's all the beginning you need is to say once upon a time. See how far you get. Now, paper and pens for this one time. And if you're not going to write, you can stay and listen. You write for about 10 minutes and I'm going to read aloud. Think of this as doing a journal entry for those of you who are new. Rough draft, first draft, raw. Can be family or gender or church or nation.